Next Chapter Podcasts.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What's up, party people? Before we do whatever we're doing, I want to tell you guys about the new show from Next Chapter Podcast and BasketballNews.com called The Rex Chapman Show. Longtime listeners of the 500 know that the only thing I love as much as music is sports. But unfortunately, not all my guests know who Fran Tarkenton is or why the Bullets are the best team ever. Luckily, Next Chapter has a true legend on their roster, Rex Chapman, former NBA All-Star. He kills it on Twitter, too. He is the king of Twitter. I liked him when he played for the Charlotte Hornets and the Washington Bullets. He was my homeboy, my homie. So along with his co-host, actor Josh Hopkins from Cougar Town, True Detective at CSI Miami, Rex interviews his friends like Steph Curry, Shaq, and this week's guest, Michael Wilbon from ESPN's Pardon the Interruption. I love that show. Listen to the Rex Chapman Show wherever you get your podcasts or visit basketballnews.com to watch videos of the show. Now, back to the 500.
The 500. J.A.M. been walking us down through that 2012 edition, so it ain't nothing to you. Hundreds more to go and in need of a friend, the king of these four, Angelo, talking the 500 until the end. Talking the 500 until the end. With my man J.A.M. on the 500, talking the 500 until the end.
Everything is everything. You're right, Lauryn Hill. God, I love this. It's came out in 1988. It's called The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. It's number 314 out of 500 on the 500. Yo. How is everybody? I've been on the road for 3 weeks. My vocal cords are getting back to a place where I feel good. Big ups to Katie Riggs, my vocal coach. Her father, like, is one of the greatest vocal coaches of all time, and Katie is nothing short of that. She is incredible, and the fact that I'm able to talk, give her love at Katie Riggs Music. Follow her, she's great. At DJ Morty Coyle, always give Morty a shout out. We love him. We're seeing him more often right now, which is great. June 12th, June 13th, I will be in Los Angeles. I have taken over the Comedy Store, goddamn Comedy Jam, on the 12th. It's a Sunday. Shimmy shimmy out on a Monday. If you're in LA or the surrounding California areas, come to that. June 24th and June 25th, I will be in Washington DC at the DC Improv. And then June 27th, very important show for me, goddamn Comedy Jam at the 930 Club. It's for the 30th anniversary of the DC Improv. The band's coming, Adam Ray's coming, Jessica Kirsten. It is going to rule. Get tickets at joshadammyers.com. Also, you can see me in Montreal. Canadian people, I'm doing the nasty show for like 10 days at Just for Laughs. I'm doing a 500. I'm doing a jam. There's always doing a lot of jams. And by the time this comes out, it'll be announced that I'm doing Cancun again in November. bunch of jams, bunch of shows, man. I'm always doing something. Subscribe to the Patreon so I'll ask your questions. Patreon.com/the500podcast. $5 or more, you can ask each guest a question. Send us your questions. I need more of them, guys. Come on, look at the list and fucking, we need more. All right. Miseducational, Lauren. I can remember the summer this came out, being in Europe. It made me such a fan of soul. I already was a fan of hip hop. I already was a fan of rock. But soul. Lauren brought that to my life. And I mean this. One of the best records of my lifetime, in my opinion. Just in my opinion. I love this record. It was really nice to dig into it again. Because I spent a lot of time with this record, man. A lot. And so did the guest. The guest today is Tony Baker. He came back. I'm basically putting him on for all of his favorite records because I love him so much. I think he's one of the funniest comics out there. It was just on HBO on Marlon Wayans produced thing where he's kind of like introducing some of these great comics like him and DC Irvin. He has one of the best Instagrams. If you haven't seen it, just type in Tony Baker Quandrell, Quandrell. It's so funny. And you can also get his new comedy special, Scaredy Cat, TonyBakerComedy.com. Rate, review, and most importantly, subscribe to the 500 and listen free on all platforms or anywhere you get your podcasts. Follow me at Josh Adam Myers on all social media. Go to JoshAdamMyers.com for all tickets and all things me. Email the podcast at 500podcast@gmail.com. We got a Facebook group. It's run by a crazy dude named Evan. And for all things 500, go to the website, the500podcast.com. Well, one of my favorite records of all time coming in at 314, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill by Lauryn Hill. Let's dive into this. Because I've been thinking about this. And I once again, I apologize about yesterday for all the fans. If the episode's shorter than it's supposed to be, it's because we had to move it a day because the neighbors of mine partying to celebrate the college graduation or whatever. And dude, they were pumping lame music and that would have bled into this. They would have put on some Fugees.
Yeah.
And that's where I want to start. I want to start there because just so everybody knows, Tony did Nas Illmatic. It's one of his favorite records, but you also said it could be this. This is like one of the two. Yeah. So, because I feel like you're just like me when it comes to this. So, did you love the Fugees? Like, how did the Fugees affect you when you first heard them back in, like, 94, 95? I think that's when they started,
roughly. I first heard the Fugees. It was a song called Vocab.
I remember that.
And it was from their debut album that nobody remembers. And as a matter of fact, the Vocab song that I heard initially, it was a video, but it was a remix.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So when I went out and bought the album, I was pissed because that wasn't the version that I saw on BET. I was livid. And I didn't like it. I didn't like the album. I didn't like it at all, as a matter of fact. And so I was just pissed. And I was just like, man, damn, man, I got played. Because I love that vocab remix. So that was my introduction to the Fugees. And I was just like, yo, they dope as hell. But again, that first album just didn't do it for me.
There was nothing on it. It was flat. It was a flat record. And I went through the same thing. I bought the thing expecting who got the vocab.
Yeah.
I was like, what is this shit? I think it was like Clipso.
I was pissed. I was just like, why would they do that? And then they didn't even have a remix on the album. So there was nothing I could do with that at that time.
Yeah.
So I just had to live in the piss. But that was my intro to her, you know what I mean? And I didn't even put two and two together that Lauryn Hill was in Sister Act 2. You know, I didn't even put two and two together.
It was, I'm trying to remember if I saw Sister Act 2 before I saw the Fugees.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, Adam, look that up when both of those came out, when Sister Act 2 came out.
But Sister Act 2 came out in 94.
94, so that's when the Fugees started. So roughly around the same time.
Mm-hmm. Because I remember that movie came out in 94. It didn't do as well as the original. But honestly, I like the second one better, but it didn't do as well as the first one at the box office. Probably because they lean more black in Sister Act 2. So I think the crossover audience didn't really, you know, come to they didn't want to see the black kids in the classroom.
But also, I don't know if you remember, that was when Whoopi was dating Ted Danson. So there's like shit going on. Whoopi's on Howard Stern, almost making fun of being black and stuff. It could have been a mixture of stuff.
It could have been that too. Yeah. I forgot about that whole Ted Danson fiasco.
Oh yeah, dude.
Yeah.
But then, would you say you loved her in Eddie, Adam?
Yeah.
All right, dude. We're not talking about Eddie. We only have an hour, bro. Don't throw us off. But then Fujila came out. Because I think that was everybody's first real introduction. Because you could say vocab. I remember vocab just like you.
Right.
When Fujila came out, they're running. They're like, I don't know what they're, it was like a movie, like the video. Like freeze frame 70s style. So what were your thoughts on Fugees in that record?
So when I first see the Fujila video, I'm just like, yo, they done did it again. You know what I'm saying? Now I'm just like, oh, you, can I cuss on here?
Please.
I was like, oh, you motherfuckers, man. This better not be a remix that I can't get a hold of, because Fujila was love at first listen. It was just like, yo, this is dope. The video was dope. It was a play on like the Harder They Come movies and like those blaxploitation movies from the 70s. So I was just like, oh, this is perfect right here, man. I'm loving the visuals. I'm loving the audio. Lauryn Hill's legs in the video was just popping. And I was just like, yo, this is everything. So I hope, you know, they don't play me this time.
They did not.
And
I think there's remixes at the end of the album, but they at least include, because they probably got a bunch of pushback.
No, well, what had happened was after the score came out, they came out with the little EP bootlegs and remixes. So it was a little EP dedicated to the bootlegs and remixes. And that's when I was finally able to get vocab remix on a CD proper. Yes. So yeah, I had to wait for the score to be a smash hit before I can get that vocab remix in my collection.
I mean, if that's Wyclef, he's a fucking genius. Like, if that's, he seems like the guy that's money hungry in the group, because it's definitely not Praz. Praz, no. what the fuck?
Lauryn Hill is pure artistry, and then Praz is just, you know, we're trying to figure it out. But Wyclef is the visionary in terms of the business of the music game.
I don't know if you obviously you don't agree with what I'm about to say, but I remember the Fugees came out and I liked Fujila, but I think I got so overwhelmed by how much MTV was just playing that video over and over. It was like you couldn't get away from the Fugees the year that album came out, especially after they released Killing Me Softly, which you know, I realize it now how great that song is, how powerful that song is. But I think I needed this record we're going to talk about to come out before I fell in love even more with Fuji. Because what was that like? Because you said something about like you saw Lauryn Hill's legs. Was Lauryn Hill like a sex symbol? Like, because I mean, she was hot. I always looked at her as just being this very cute, small woman.
Right.
But I mean, to the black community.
Well, what it was like, you know, when we first saw Lauryn, it was just like, okay, you know, she's cute, she's pretty. But then it was like, you know, you see her in a different light in the Fugees, because, you know, they're older. And so it was just like, wow, you know what I'm saying? And then her face on the Fugees, the score album, was just perfect. It was just like, you know, just black beauty in its purest form. And we were just like, man, this is what we're talking about right here. And so, like, you know, when the score came out, I bought it opening day. I remember it came out, Fugees came out, the score came out the same day as Tupac's All Eyes on Me, same day.
Wow.
So I had to make a decision. It was like, yo, do I buy Tupac or do I buy the score? Knowing, you know, how the Fugees disappointed me with that initial release, I still went with the score because, you know, I was kind of salty at Pac because, you know, I kind of chose sides in the beef. And so, you know,
salty.
I was salty. I chose sides. But I got the score opening day. And when I tell you, you know, immediately I was just like, now this is not a disappointment. That's one of those albums you can just let it play. You can just let it play. And I'm glad it continued to sell. It was just like nobody saw this album coming. And it was just like, ultimately, you know, it outsold Tupac, which was crazy because, you know, Tupac had all this buzz and, you know, he's already four albums deep and the beef was going. So it was just free press on that tip. And it was just like, but ultimately, you know, mind you, you know, All Eyes on Me has the diamond certification, but they double that. So it's like, you know, if you get a diamond, if you a double album that goes diamond, technically you only sold 5 million actual copies.
Yeah.
To get the diamond. So they double that. But Fugees was just a worldwide phenomenon with the score. And it was just like, that was one of those albums that deserved every copy sold.
And yeah. Oh, I completely agree. There's a couple tracks on it that don't hold up as much, but the ones that do, it really showcased, you know, how good hip hop could be. That wasn't like, cause that was also when Gangsta was starting to really get big. And that was a record that was, it was, you know, it was in the vein of Tribe Called Quest where it's like, no, we're saying something.
Right.
We're saying something that everybody can dig on. It doesn't have to be white, black, Mexican, whatever. You could be in gangs. You don't have to be in gangs.
Right.
Because we got to start getting into this record because you only have a little bit of time. But like, dude, I was attracted to the two people the most, Wyclef.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember when the Carnival came out, fucking got the Carnival. You know, bring your ass. I mean, the sketches are lame as fuck. I just listened to it last night. I was like, oh god,
it's so long. I'm just like, why we had to have so many sketches?
So many sketches, dude. There's like 34 tracks. It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
but the thing that made me love the Fugees, and I'm curious if this is the same thing. Was Lauren. There was something special about Lauren Hill that you just felt the second she sang Killing Me Softly or the hook to Fuji Law, whatever it was. Like, what was that? Was that what you were attracted to too?
Yeah, it was like, you know, Lauren was a standout. She was the first face I saw. And it was just like, man, this is just, you know, Wyclef, you know, grew on me and surprised me actually with the Carnival. Yeah. Like, the Carnival was an album I could not stop playing. I was just like, yo, I didn't expect to really like this album this much from Wyclef, and I loved it. I was like, I couldn't stop playing it. And so, you know, and Lauren's on that album as well. And it was just like, every time she shows up, she delivers. You know, whether she's singing, rapping, whatever, everything she showed up on, she delivered. And I was just like, man, Lauren is just special. So, you know, when Wyclef drops his solo album, I was just like, oh man. So when you were hearing buzz about Lauren dropping her solo album, it was just like, man, I hope, you know, she lives up to what she's been presenting so far. You know what I mean? And so and she did that.
Oh my God. So everybody has an idea of what happened before this record, we got a little breakdown. I could go through, let's just talk about Lauren. Born in 75 in Newark, New Jersey, moved to South Orange, New Jersey as a child, came from a musically oriented family. Her mom played piano. Her dad sang in local nightclubs and at weddings. Some of her biggest influences, which once I say these, you're like, this, that fucking record. Curtis Mayfield, Stevie Wonder, Aretha Franklin, Gladys Knight, and Marvin Gaye. She got her start by singing national anthem before a middle school basketball game and eventually went on to amateur night as a contestant on Showtime at the Apollo. Do you remember that? Did you like?
No, I didn't see the Apollo thing until after. You know, I saw it after.
She sang Smokey Robinson's "Who's Loving You."
Yeah.
In high school, she formed a group with classmate. I'm just gonna say Praz Michael because there's no way I can say his real name. Praz
Michelle.
No, it's Praka Rizal. I don't even know if Adam wrote that right. Praka Rizal.
Oh wow!
I tried my best.
Yeah.
They called Translator Crew because they wanted to rhyme in different languages. Eventually, multi-instrumentalist named Wyclef Jean came along, and they performed in local showcases and at talent shows. Hill always had the singing chops, but started wanting to develop her rapping skills, studying Ice Cube to develop her flow. The Translator Crew renamed themselves to the Fugees in 94. They released that album that Tony talked about that was straight butt cheeks, blunted on reality. And then their second record, which we've talked about for the last few minutes, The Score, catapulted them to stardom. It peaked at number one on the Billboard chart and stayed in the top 10 for 6 months. Fuck, dude. Mm-hmm. The successor tracks like Killing Me Softly, Ready or Not, you know, you could say it was never Praz. You could say it's Wyclef it's his style, or you could say it's Lauren. I'm going to say Lauren, despite the success of the album, the Fugees started to crumble in 97 and split to work on solo projects, which is where we are right now, everybody.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget. And we decide if they brought the One Hit Thunder or were nothing more than a one hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week. So pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.
I don't think everybody realizes this. This is probably the best record made in my lifetime, in my opinion. I remembered when this was getting ready to come out. And like I said, I started to like the, I didn't like the hype of the Fugees, but yeah, they lived up to it.
Right.
The album, because I think I started smoking a lot more weed and I started hanging out with the right people that were playing it. And I was like, oh, right, no, this is really good. So yeah, the idea, and then Wyclef's record came out.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, dude, now I'm fucking in. but I was ready for that Lauryn Hill thing. I was ready for it. And I don't know if you remember the first track that they released. It was the bonus track. It's Can't Take My Eyes Off of You.
Right.
That was before Doo-Wop. Doo-Wop was, I think, getting ready to come out. But I remember before everything, they did Can't Take My Eyes Off of You. And I was like,
it was on the Conspiracy Theory soundtrack.
Was it really?
Yeah, it played at the end of the movie Conspiracy Theory with Mel Gibson and Julia Roberts. That was the first time I heard it. Yeah. And I was just like, yo, this is a Lauryn Hill track. It's fire. So, you know, so when the album came out, I already was familiar with that song because I heard it on that movie.
But it's the same thing. It's like, you don't know what the album's going to be. All right. I know is that I wanted more of whatever that was, because that's such an iconic song. And right, to have her add, like, you know, 90s hip hop feel into it, it's still to this day, I will never turn it off if it's on.
Yeah.
It's that fucking good.
Yeah.
So just so we can pick it up, this is what I came to the more I've researched this record, especially this go around of what I fucking love about it, is that you have to understand that there's a beef between Wyclef and Lauren. Holy moly. It just keeps getting better. Let's pause this episode. Have you ever thought about starting a podcast of your own? I know I make this sound easy, but the truth is, creating a successful show like the 500 takes more than just a killer idea. There's a ton of work involved behind the scenes, but luckily, I've got my team at Next Chapter Podcast behind me making sure everything comes together. So if you've had that big idea for a podcast rattling around your head for a while now, but don't know where to start, why not make it a reality with the help of Next Chapter? Guest booking and interview recording? They got it. Post-production editing and sound design? They got it. Advertising and marketing support? They got it. Next Chapter Podcast has been producing the 500 since the drop, because I know the owner, Jeremiah Tittle. That's my home skillet. And they do a great job. I'm not going to lie. You know, I do love Jeremiah and I trust him. So if you guys want to make some podcasts, yeah, go to ncpodcast.com/contact and send them a message ASAP to get the ball rolling. And now back to the podcast. You know, I'm assuming you know about this, right, Tony?
Yeah, I heard about it.
So, So following the split of the Fugees, Hill's former bandmate, Wyclef, blamed the split of the group on Hill's pregnancy. So, I guess from everything I know, is Lauryn Hill starts fucking around with Rohan Marley, and she becomes pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And through other circumstances, I think through the breakup, because her and Wyclef dated, and now they break up, this is kind of what has inspired Hill to make the solo record, which everybody is saying, don't do it. Don't have this kid.
Yeah.
Because that's going to ruin your life. It's going to ruin your career. You're about to blow up. You're about to try to make a solo record. Right. And Wyclef, at the same time, I think she started to work with Wyclef and then was like, no, fuck this. Like, we're not on the same page. That caused even more beef. His tumultuous relationship with Hill and Jean marrying another woman while being in a relationship with Hill. Oh, shit. Okay. So he was in another relationship, starts fucking around with Hill. Shortly after Hill began working on the solo project, she turned down Wyclef's offer to produce the record. And then he urged her to not start a solo career. According to her former bandmate Praz, this led to Hill's animosity towards Jean after she fully supported his solo career and featured on his album The Carnival. So she puts out this record. And before I even tell you what I thought, what were your first thoughts when you put this on? Where did you buy it? Like, give me all of that.
So I just got to New Mexico State when it came out. I bought it opening day, first day.
Go Armadillos. I don't know if that's their logo. No.
Aggies. So we pile up in my little Suzuki, Suzuki Swift. You know, we pile up in that little two-door. We
call make that egg. Anymore, dude.
No, hell no, man. That car. We piled up, you know, we piled in there. We went to the mall, and I went and bought that Lauryn Hill album. So we listening to it in the car on the way back from Hastings. And, and The Lost Ones is the first song that we hear, and it's just, you know, everybody in the car feeling it. We just like, okay. And then it follows it over X Factor, and we just like, God damn. And then Zion, and it's just like, yo, back-to-back heat. So it was just like, man, she already delivering on, you know, the expectations, you know.
And here's the thing. I was going to ask you this because Lost Ones is straight hip-hop. It's a straight diss track, which we come to find out later about Wyclef, and I think probably Praz too. It makes you almost feel like the record's going to be all like that. You don't know. Cause it's a banger.
Right.
Up top, a banger, big middle finger to everybody. Like y'all, you know, you just lost one. So, just getting your opinion. Did you think that, or were you like,
I was just like, you know, what I expected from Hill.
Yeah.
Was that she was going to rap and sing because I saw what she was doing. Because from the very beginning, she was always singing. Like, even with Vocab, the Vocab remix, she's singing in it. But she's rapping, but she's also harmonizing a lot. And then, you know, on the Fugees, The Score, she's doing a lot of singing. Like, you know, she did a whole, you know, Roberta Flack cover. So it was just like, okay, this is what I expect. I expect her to be singing and rapping. She's the double threat. Mm-hmm. And so I was just looking forward to an album full of that, where it's just, you know, she's taking the lead. This is her moment. And so she was giving me just what I expected. And so I was just like, hell yeah, you know. And then X Factor was just like, X Factor is one of the best songs ever created. And I listened to X Factor every day from the day I purchased that album for a whole semester. I listened to that song every day. Mm-hmm. It's just... And it is still amazing. Still amazing.
It's funny that the first two songs, I'm going to pull the track listing up. I know it by heart, but the first two songs, Lost Ones and X Factor, are fuck yous to Wyclef.
Right.
I mean, have you read the lyrics? Like, I've been listening and reading the lyrics as we go because it's like I know them phonetically in my head.
Right.
But to see them on paper, I mean... Yeah. X Factor is I gotta pull the lyrics up, but it's a fuck you. Yeah. Like, I love you, and it's like, but man, like, you are just, she says reciprocity.
Man, that was the first time I heard that word. Yeah. I was like, oh, my nose bled. I was just like, what word is this?
Were you already using big words back then? Because that's something I love about you, is like, you are a wordsman. You're the George Carlin.
Reciprocity. Definitely not reciprocity. I was just like, what, who? My nose bled. I had to pull out the booklet on that. I didn't even Google, you know what I'm saying? I had to pull out an actual book and be like, what the hell did she just say?
I mean, it's one thing I can say about this record, because my I think my story about how I got it, I was excited, and I remember Can't Take My Eyes Off of You came out. And then Doo-Wop and the video of her, like, just, she looks so cute and and it was like, and I don't know, like I said, I don't know anything about the history of what's going on with her and Wyclef. I didn't even know.
Well, I didn't know either.
I don't think anybody did. Yeah. I was just like, I just knew I was excited about this. And then the album came out, I think 2 or 3 days before I left for Europe. I was going to Europe for 7 months. I didn't know I was going for 7 months, but I knew that I was going for a while. Me and my buddy. And this record is the sad. When I listen to this record, it takes me back to Europe. I think of this and Beastie Boys' Hello Nasty are like, are the two records I was just fucking pounding.
Yeah.
And I mean, I fell in love with it, because this is like, how could you not? I mean, it's got everything that you need on it. It's got hip hop, it's got reggae, it's got great guitar, it's got soul, it's, her voice is perfect.
It's just, you know, X Factor is just, the video was amazing. It was, you know, the build up, the song builds, and then, you know, the climax of the song is just outstanding. The background vocals, the guitar, which I'm always like, they say Carlos Santana was on Zion.
I know,
but I swear up and down that's him on X Factor. That has to be him.
Yeah. Hold on, let me find out who it is.
That has to be Carlos Santana on that guitar on X Factor.
Guitar track 2, no. Guitar track 10, nope.
Track 4.
It says track 4. I know track 4. It says track 4.
That sounds just like Carlos Santana, though.
It's the same sound. Yeah, it's the exact same sound.
Same, like, you know.
All right, here it is. Johari Newton.
He got the Santana sound down.
He got the Santana sound.
Man, because it was just like, you know, because I always, that always haunted me. I was just like, man, that has to be Carlos under a pseudonym, because... You know, the way he had that guitar singing at the end of that track, it was just like, it was incredible.
Yeah, there's that little riff, that little like,
man. It reminded me of, you know, Carlos's song Somewhere in Heaven, and you know, his guitar solo at the end of that song is just absolutely amazing.
It's you're not wrong, and look up to find out who that dude is, Adam. We got to see what he looks like, just to make sure he's a real human.
It's gonna be a picture of Carlos Santana,
just like with his hair straightened.
Yeah, it's gonna be like, this is the guy. I'm like, all right, I see you. He goes.
There's, I mean this, like, it's every track on this aside from one. There's five and one, which I'm not going to say what that is until we get to the ending. But I think this is like everything about this record. It's the sound, the sequencing to open with Lost Ones, then bring it down to X Factor, then to build a star, but then this emotional song to Zion, which is about, like, you know, having the kid. And she's literally like, dude, this is the thing. She's not hiding any lyrics. Like, what, like X Factor, kind of, you could say it's about love, or it's about her career and how somebody is telling her you're not going to amount to anything. You're chasing this fame instead of making art. And then and then Zion is about, like, I mean, she lays it out, like, listen, you know, look at your career. They said, Lauren, darling, you know, baby, use your head. And she's like, no, I chose use my, this song. It's like, it's heavy. It's heavy. Doo-wop. What'd you think of Doo-Wop? What'd you think of when Doo-Wop was?
I loved it.
Yeah.
You know what I love about Doo-Wop is that she's speaking to both men and women in this track. You know, she's telling the fellas, hey, watch out. She's telling the ladies, hey, watch out. And so everybody's included. Nobody feels like, oh man, she's taking a shot at this, fellas. Or the ladies are not like, hey man, she turned her back on us. She's pointing everything out. And she's making great points, and she's talking to men and women. And I feel like that's just a brilliant space to be in. And it's not materialistic, or it's not hypersexual. It's just the perfect conversation about what to watch out for out here. And it was just, you know, amazing. And I'm just like, man, and the video was outstanding. It was just
outstanding.
Like, you know, everything was just firing on all cylinders. And I was just like, man, God damn, Lauren, you were just.
I mean, what was the reaction amongst, like, because, like, I'm not going to lie, a lot of my friends were into, like, rock and right. the hip hop. They were still caught up on Wu-Tang. Yeah. You know, these are the white kids from right side of D.C.
Right.
But someone like me, like, I have this memory. Being at this huge rave that I used to go to weekly in Washington, D.C. It was called Buzz. It's one of the biggest parties in the country, biggest DJs in the world, all the mm-hmm. drugs you could possibly think of.
Right.
And being like really fucked up. But in my head, I could just not stop singing Nothing Even Matters, yes. which is like one of the most beautiful love songs, you know, mm-hmm. of my lifetime. And it feels honest. It's like, and having D'Angelo, which he's yeah. just... I mean, it's like, what was like the amongst your friends or amongst your mm-hmm. homies, like, what was the reaction from this record? I'm assuming incredible.
Let me tell you something, man. When this album came out, everybody was playing it. You go yeah. to everybody's dorm room. This album was in rotation in everybody's dorm room. It was that album. It was the one everybody was listening to. We go to the women's dorm room. We in there. We walk in. You know, the album is playing. Nothing Even Matters is playing. Like, you know, and this is D'Angelo when this is prime D'Angelo. Like, you know, he's white
he's
hot.
Sexy. It was just he like, man, sexy. This is, yeah, dude.
this is prime D'Angelo. This is before Untitled, but it was still like he's coming off of Brown Sugar, and every appearance that he does, he's just killing it. So it was just like Lauren and D'Angelo together. It was just the perfect match, like, you know, and these are two artists we wanted them to date, we wanted them to be together and be singing to each other for real.
Yeah,
so it was just a perfect storm of that type of record, and we were all in. We were just like, man, this is amazing.
I think one of the things that I really, you know, and I mean love about this record, because it came out and I was obsessed, much like you and all your friends, and regardless of whatever other music I've gotten into throughout my life, mm-hmm. I've always had a moment in the year where I put this album back on.
Yeah.
And especially, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that she's never made anything since.
Right.
You know what I mean? So this came out in 98. I pumped it. And then when they were talking about her doing an unplug, and I was so excited, dude. I was fucking jazzed. And yeah. I remember I bought it immediately. Mm. And that day I had to go work at this crab house in Baltimore called Crabby Dicks. It was owned by these two gay dudes. They eventually fired me because I stole some cream of crab soup.
He's stealing soup.
Because I took it, and then I was like, the kitchen dude was like, you're gonna pay for that? I was like, yeah, I'm gonna pay for it, dude. I'm just on my break. I'm gonna eat it, and then I'll go ring it in when I clock back in.
Yeah.
Because I didn't ring it in immediately, he told right. John, the owner, and John and Dale were just, they were crazy, and they fired me on the spot.
Wow.
I needed that job too, man.
Man, the soup.
The soup, dude.
But they were soup Nazis, man.
Look, dude, obviously it worked out for me because I'm doing a podcast about Lauryn Hill years later. So fuck right. them. They're in Rehoboth Beach right now. Was the soup good? Adam, it was incredible. If you're asking me.
Because if you would have stayed at that place, you would have never pursued stand-up. And it wouldn't have led into anything.
Who knows? Like,
you'd have climbed the corporate ladder at the place, and then you'd still be there now.
Yes, I'd be in Rehoboth.
Yeah.
I don't want to be in Rehoboth. But I got that unplugged, and I went to the crab house to work. And I remember we used to have to peel potatoes.
Yeah.
And I put it on, and I was like, yo, dude, it's that new Lauryn Hill. And I just remember the guy that was peeling potatoes with me was like, dude, this is depressing the fuck out of me, dude. It's the sound of a woman having a breakdown.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, and I think what has really made this album that much more special and such, and, you know, where I really, I'm, because this is such a great record, and to know that she's never done anything since.
Right.
Really, like, it just makes this so much sweeter because she did everything in this record, Tony.
Right.
She wrote every song.
Yeah.
When they try to throw new producers on her or try to help her, and she's like, no, I got this. She's right. written every song. She produced the entire record.
Right.
And it's just, I think that makes it feel heavier or more important because of what she's done since, which is nothing.
Right. It's almost like it feels like she passed away. I don't want to say anything ill like that, but it's like that's the kind of mystique the album has, is because she hasn't done another proper album since. So it's just like, it's just like Biggie dropping Life After Death, or like, these albums that were dropped by these artists that were gone too soon. It's just, it makes the album even heavier. And like, it means, and it was very personal, and every track felt like, nothing felt like filler here. And it was just like pure artistry. And it was just like, man, and how do you top that? Like there's almost no way to top something like this. So it's just like the pressure of, oh man, you gotta come. Cause it was like, she was winning Grammys. She was breaking records on the Grammys, and like, she went gold first week. So it was just like, that too can play into it, like, man, how do I even top this? Especially when it's an album that came from such a personal place. And then the Unplugged felt like more of those feelings, but it didn't feel like a proper new album.
No, it wasn't. It was. I mean, it was a double disc. And I remember, so did I. I took it to the Crab House.
I didn't sit with it though. I was like, all right. And then I was out of there.
I might have listened to it for, a week.
Yeah.
And then it's not this. And this is what I think everybody wanted.
Welcome to us talking about our podcast for a minute.
What's the name of that podcast?
That's Axe to Grind. And right now you're going to be getting a little taste of it, right down to the shaky microphone and all.
And my name's Bob.
And my name's Patrick. And usually we're joined by Tom.
Tom's the best. Tom has a real grown-up job that requires him to be at work. But we talk about decidedly not so grown-up things like
hardcore music and things that people that like hardcore music tend to like.
So that could be the latest shows, revisiting classic material, talking about the new classics, all the little dorm room nonsense that you imagine from a niche music podcast that you either love, want to love, or hate.
Yeah, imagine all the emotions that you have towards a genre that has impacted your life, and then condense them down to an hour to 2 hours a week.
So triangulate your speakers, think about jumping off the bed, singing along, dancing like an idiot, and listen to Axe to Grind podcast.
Well, hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like The Lumineers, Ani DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask?
I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon.
Dude, I mean, look at this. I'm just looking at the stats of this record. All right. So just so everybody knows, the album is named after The Miseducation of the Negro, a book by Professor Carter G. Woodson, an American Black history expert. The album, which is written and arranged all by Hill, was about the education one receives after leaving school and the life learning process. It sold over 420,000 albums in its first week, breaking the record for most first week sales by a female artist. The album received 11 Grammy nominations, making it the first hip hop record to receive that many. It won five, making Hill the first female artist to win that many. Two of those included Album of the Year and Best New Artist, which are like, you know, the two big ones that you can win.
Right.
Especially Album of the Year. And I mean, Adam, look up what else was nominated against it. Because if, I mean, if this wouldn't have won, I mean, that would have like,
right.
Like, what are you talking about?
The Grammys got it right, didn't you?
No, they really did. They really did. I mean, I think this is kind of why now listening to it, it brings so much emotion to me. Because I texted you because we were getting ready to do this, that I was at the gym. I was at the New York Sports Club on 23rd Street. And, you know, I mean, there's just all these like testosterone dudes around you. And I'm listening to Forgive Me, Father.
Yeah.
Which, because this is the thing. I could sit here and say, you know, I got to look at the track listing before I even talk about this. I could say because dude, it's like I'm trying to pick out my favorite song. I don't want you to tell me yours yet. We're gonna ask that at the end. But it's like, dude, it's gone through so many layers where it's like at first it was Can't Take My Eyes Off of You, then it became Nothing Even Matters, then now right now it's like I'm like, fuck, everything is like one of the best songs.
Oh, that video is crazy.
It's crazy. And then The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, which is just like I'm fucking running. I have so much I want to talk about. So I text Tony, everybody. I'm listening to Forgive Me, Father. Mm-hmm. And that part where she's like talking about the backstabbers, she's like Cain and Abel, Caesar and Brutus, Jesus and Judas. And I just started tearing up.
Right.
Because this is why I think I love this record and why it's even more important to me now. Mm-hmm. For multiple reasons. But one, it's the story of it. It's the fact that nobody was telling her to make this record. People said, don't have the kid.
Right.
You know, the Fugees, both of them, Praz and Wyclef, are both like, you know, you'll never, whatever, dude, you're not going to be anything without us. You know, we made you, whatever.
Allegedly, that's what they said.
Allegedly, yes. Allegedly. But judging by the song.
Well, yeah. It could have been, I just didn't want to throw Praz in there. Maybe he wasn't.
Man, fuck Praz, dude. I'm still waiting on a solo record.
He put one out.
Well, we're not talking about superstar. It. He had
his song with ODB and Maya.
Yeah, but if Maya doesn't fucking sing that hook, that song ain't shit without Maya. Maya was sexy, dude. Maya was sexy.
It was. Have you seen her lately?
Pull her up, Adam. Pull up Maya.
Go to her Instagram page. She looks incredible.
She got OnlyFans? I'll sign up for that shit.
She looks, she's like super, she's super vegan. She looks amazing.
Really?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think I gotta go. Well, you weren't vegan by the time. You were still eating meat back then when this record came out.
Oh, hell yeah, man. It was Meats McGee.
You're like the barbecue, like, look, yeah, see some ribs.
I was meeting McClintock when this came out. I was eating everything, man. I went to Jack in the Box after I bought this album.
Got the worst food in the fucking world.
Man, got a jumbo Jack.
But there's, I think what really is has moved, because dude, after I left the gym, I came here. And to my apartment, let me see her. Oh yeah, dude. Yeah, she's gorgeous.
I'm telling you, she hasn't missed a beat. Time has been on her side for sure. She looks incredible.
I always get worried that when people share their screen and you see the tabs up top, there's going to be like, you know, Bukkake explosion.
Oh yeah.
Like Adam always like, make sure you close that shit out, dude, before you show your screen. I ain't showing you mine, dude. It is bad.
The tabs right now, I have a D'Angelo before, and I had an after one, but I lost that one.
No, D'Angelo went through a bunch of moments where he was first record, he just looks like a normal dude. Second record, drop dead gorgeous. I mean, that video propelled him to be this. I mean, he became a sex symbol, and then he got, it's the D'Angelo. That's the good D'Angelo. But then it became fat D'Angelo and recluse D'Angelo.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. So, but you know, when he did drop that album, finally, it was a good one.
Oh, it was great. Black Messiah.
Yeah, that was a good album.
I love D'Angelo. We did. It's funny that we're doing this. We've done the score. I did that with Andrew Santino on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And then I did D'Angelo, that second record. I can't think of the title. I did Voodoo with Michael Rappaport.
Oh, wow.
And what was funny was, like, I remember we had like some real hip hop shit coming up, and I was like, you want to do one of those? He goes, no, I'll do D'Angelo.
Yeah.
Because I love the sound of neo soul. I think neo soul in the 90s when it started coming back, and I love the hip hop that was all from that collective. I love Common. I love Mos Def. I think Black Star. I'm surprised that Black Star isn't on this, because it damn sure needs to be. That was the funny thing about Chappelle getting, which is nothing funny about a comic getting attacked on stage, but how everybody that was side stage like beat up the dude.
Yeah.
So I can imagine like the dude who got beat up talking to the cop, and he's like, and there I was getting choked by Erykah Badu's head wrap.
The Soul Quarian beat back.
Yeah, I got Mos Def is just curb stomping me. Talib Kweli is working on my side. Oh man. I was like, oh shit, Black Star's back together.
The collective, man.
But they're making this great music. I think I go home after crying at the gym, tearing up, and then I put the record on by myself, and I lost it. Like the second half of that record, man, you know, when it hurt so bad, I used to love him. Forgive me, Father. Every ghetto, every city needs to be cut from this record. If you cut every ghetto, every city, this is a perfect record. I skip that song. I've tried to listen to it. But every time I fucking listen to it, I'm just like, oh God. It's like sitting on the corner stoop. Oh, my cousin's taking a poop. I'm just like, all right, no.
It is the weakest track on the album. But it's still solid. But if they lost it, you know, it wouldn't. You know, but for an album to be 16 tracks deep and to have one blemish.
Exactly.
You know, it's incredible.
It is incredible. Look, dude, I opened this whole thing by saying this is one of the best albums of my lifetime. And I think two reasons why, like what I'm trying to get to is why this album means so much. It's knowing that we got this one thing from Lauren. Mm-hmm. Everybody, like I said, treated her ex, and she was like, no, I'm going to do Y. I'm going to do my thing.
Right.
It's the most, one of the most personal records without hiding it. And it's just like, it's just so powerful because of what she never did anything after this. I also think one of the reasons I love this record so much is because, especially post losing Ange, is because a lot of this is like, I loved him. He was one of my best friends. Some of the songs, they don't have to be about lovers. They can be about your kids. They can be about this. And it just hits differently.
Right.
And I got to ask you this. It's like listening to it now, like gone through what you've gone through, what we both have gone through. Like, I mean, does it hit differently? Does there tracks that stick out that didn't stick out before?
No, I can't say that it has. You know, probably when it hurts so bad, it hits a little different now. That's probably the main track that does hit me differently.
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, I've always had a real deep emotional connection with this album, for a long time because, you know, even with, because like, you know, when this album came out, you know, I was just dating, you know, the mother of my children then, like we had just got together then. So it was just like, you know, the album always resonated with us. So, you know, I was always had that personal attachment to the album. In my own personal life, love life, breakups, all that, you know, new children, everything coincided with my life too. So it was just like, you know, I always felt that album on that level. So it's always been very personal and like a time capsule of, you know, what I was going through, what I was living through and everything. So it's always been a companion piece to my life. That's why this album is in my holy trinity of.
What are they?
It's Illmatic, it's End of the Wu-Tang 36, and The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. That's my holy trinity, right?
Like,
that's what
something.
I'm getting on the spaceship with.
Let me tell you something. If Tom Segura doesn't say he's going to do Enter the 36, that would have been yours. I love you so much that I was like, you can look at the rest of the list and be like, pick whatever. If there's something that are out of the Trinity, they're yours, dude.
Yeah.
They're yours.
That's my Trinity right there. Those three albums. So, you know,
rank them though. Rank them right now.
It's probably in that order. It's probably
Illmatic
and then 36 Miseducation.
You know, trying to think about, this is definitely in my top 10, 100%. Mm-hmm. I don't know where it falls. I don't think it's my favorite album all time. Right now it is. Like right now, this is like, I don't want to move on from this record. I want to keep listening to it. I don't know many records that satisfy, like, how do I put this? Like I know music so well and I feel music on such a deep level that if I listen to a song and there's like a bridge that doesn't go to this note that I want to hear listening to like the rest of it. And it's just like, I'm like, just do that. And if you did that, this would be a perfect song. Play the chorus one more time. Like, just do it. We need it.
Right.
Everything about this record satisfies me to where I don't think she could have done anything different besides cut every ghetto, every city. It's so bad.
Yeah. Dude. Yeah.
The Chunky Monkey, Ben and Jerry's, all them kids over there are scary. Sitting in New Jerusalem. I'm like, all right. Yeah. You know what's funny? I didn't like, what was the one with Come On Baby, Light My Fire? I didn't like that for a while. And now, like, I fucking love that song.
Oh, that song is fire, man.
Fire.
Everything you drop is so tired.
Yeah, see, now
it's supposed to inspire.
But it's because, Tony, it's because I'll come.
Man, that song is, man, come on, man.
I know. Well, you know, look, I'm telling you, you gotta grow sometimes, and I grew. But that's the thing. I'm telling you, it's like knowing that this is all we've gotten from her, and probably we're ever going to get from her.
Right.
It's so sad because, well, is it sad? Is it sad that this is all we got, this great record? Or like, what do you think?
Even though it's not sad, but it's like, it's frustrating because I feel like Lauren was on pace. She could have been the biggest music artist in the world.
Yeah.
Ever to exist had she had, you know, kept going on this plane, because she was able to transcend. You know, she was headed towards that Bob Marley type status where everybody's all in on this. It was like she was the perfect representation of, you know, of blackness and womanhood and femininity and, like, you know, emotion and visual and, like, everything was just, it was the perfect storm of just like humanity in her with this music. And it was just like, man. You know, it was crazy, and it was just like, yo, we've been needing this. We've been
needing this
because she, you know, she's talking, and all the lyrics, you know, it felt very personal. No cookie cutter, you know, the label head wanted me to write this song about this, and it was just like those lyrics were she sat in those lyrics, and, like, you know, it was from the soul, and it was just like, man, we feeling it. And it was just, you know, and she still had that with the Unplugged, but it was just, she didn't have the production behind it or whatever. But, you know, she had the potential to just be, and we need her now more than ever. It's just like, man, come on. Like that little sample she gave us on that Nas album, King's Disease 2.
I got to listen to that. Everybody's talking about, like, it. Man,
come on back, Lauren. Just come on back real quick. Give us something. You know, because it's like, you know, everybody's on the materialistic, they're on the hypersexual, or they're on just, you know, just talking shit. And it's just like, there's no heft unless you go underground, like, you know, outside of Rhapsody and, you know, underground artists. But she's underground, too. It's just like the mainstream female rappers right now. Not to, you know, pinpoint, you know, the males are doing it, too. But we have that balance of, you know. It's a lot of male rappers out here ain't talking about shit, and they selling, they streaming like crazy. But at least we have Kendrick and J. Cole who have content with the sales to back it up. I want that from a woman as well when it comes to, you know, rap and, like, hip hop and, like, you know, outside. I need that to carry over to the sales so we don't have to go underground to find Rhapsody or Cy Rock or, you know, these these other artists that are just relegated to the underground when they should be on every radio station pumped just like everybody else.
You know? Yeah, you know, it's funny that you say that because she held the record for a female artist. And Adam, double check my math or somebody's going to get mad, but I remember reading it that it hadn't been broken until Cardi B.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, Cardi B won't be remembered. That record won't be Boback Yellow is not going to be remembered 10 years from now. We're not going to be talking about Boback Yellow the way that critics, I mean, dude, this is like a critical darling. Even Richard Gusteau or the, what's his name, Adam, the dude that we always talk about, Robert Christgau. He's like, he said it was brilliant. This guy hates on everything. He's terrible.
Oh my God. Yeah.
But this is like, there's something like we talk about the word perfect and even, you know, this is just my opinion. Like I said, even that with that one track on it, it's so good. It's so perfect. It's so like, Cardi B's not, maybe they're like these artists now, they're kind of telling women, you know, you got to be sexy and get your money and get your shit right. Lauren was saying it like, believe in yourself, like love yourself. They're saying the same things, but it's laid out like poetry, you know?
Here's the difference. Like if you listen to rap lyrics now, they're talking about get your money, we buying this. It's materialistic. You know, yeah, at the core of it, you got, hey man, you telling people to get theirs and stuff like that. But the visual and the presentation, it's all materialistic. Lauryn Hill was touching souls from any level that you were sitting at, whether you're broke in college, whether you dropped out of school. The presentation was, you know, artistic and visual. Like when she's singing X Factor, it's just like she could be any woman on the street. You know, when she's coming at you with doo-wop, she's giving you an old timey visual aesthetic of like the doo-wop singers of back in the day. So it's just like, yo, you can relate to the nostalgia of it while she's talking to you in the now. Like, you know, she's not counting money. She's not holding a money stack up to her head. She's not at the strip club making it rain. It's just like, she's hitting you on a level where you're just on a train going to a job you hate. You're walking to class. Whatever you're doing, it connected to you personally. And I'm like, we need that on the mainstream out there level. We shouldn't have to dig in the crates or like, you know, I never even heard of this artist right here because they're not being pushed forward like a Cardi B. And like, you know, no disrespect to Cardi B because I actually like Cardi B as a person and as a human being, like she's herself. But I just feel like there's an imbalance of what we're pushing out there to the masses.
We're out there.
Yes, we're out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hyden, Backstreet's Magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!
And so, do you listen to new, I mean, you mentioned some of the bigger artists, but like, who would you think is taking the torch of Lauryn Hill? Do you even know, or do you listen to enough to know?
I feel like in the vein of Lauryn Hill is Kendrick, is J. Cole, is Rhapsody, you know?
Yeah.
Like Rhapsody she's still underground. She's like one of my favorite rappers out, male or female, right now. And the albums that she's put out and the music that she creates and puts out there is just like, is criminally just overlooked. And it's just like, man, come on. Like, you know, it's like good bodies of work, not just like a song that's hot on TikTok or a song that's just hot.
Yeah.
She's making good bodies of work in the vein of like Lauryn Hill. So it's just like a thought out project with a theme and like content all throughout. It's just like, that's the kind of shit that resonates on the Lauryn Hill level.
Yeah.
And that's what we're missing on a mainstream level. We need that.
Yeah. You know, it's, I don't think there is anybody
that is doing what she does, because, you know, she has one of the best voices. It's like there's moments where she hits these little runs and everything is everything that I just get choked up because it's so beautiful. Yeah. But not only is she singing incredibly,
right,
her lyrics as a rapper are like, holy
shit.
She is
barred up,
like,
man.
Like, you know, this rapper slash actress, more powerful than two Cleopatras. Like,
she is barred up.
It's equally. I can't even say that the rapping doesn't hold a claim to, or fire to the way she's singing.
Right.
Both of them are like, are just right here.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody's doing what she did. And I know what you're saying about Kendrick and about the message and being able to still stay in the old and make the old new and make it great. And but I don't think there is anybody. That's why I think this record moved from what number is it now, Adam, on what we're doing?
So it moved up all the way to number.
Well, no, what was the original? What was the one that we're doing right now?
Today it is 314.
And on the 2020 list, which they did,
which
after
is the more accurate list, but keep going.
It's
more accurate, man. That old list was mad white, and you know it.
Yes, 100%. But they I think, look, dude, for Sgt. Pepper to go from number one to number 25
is accurate.
Every Drake album needs to be on.
Oh no, absolutely not.
Then it's not accurate.
Wait, they had every Drake album on there?
Every Drake record. No, they did not. Yes, if not all of them, but five of them.
No, there's no
way.
Dude. There's no way there's five Drake albums on
this
list.
Adam, this is what Adam's here.
Adam, cue it up, man. There's no way.
But, because, dude, both of your two favorite records went from, I think, Nas-O-Matic went from, like, whatever the fuck number it was to, like, number 40, I'm not saying it shouldn't be.
Right.
But this, there's an argument. There's an argument that it should or it shouldn't. With this record moving all the way to number 10.
Okay.
I am so okay with that. It's not even funny. I think this record will be remembered and talked about. And that's the thing, is that I hope that, you know, and seeing that list and seeing her move up to number 10, then I'm kind of like, okay, maybe this will be in the you know, and when you're talking about the history of music, this is an important record, not just for me, not just for you and other people that fuck with it, but it deserves all the it's like, dude, you can't say it didn't deserve to win anything it won. It deserved everything.
It's an amazing masterpiece, from the album cover to the videos to the lyrics to the production. It is just an incredible piece of work.
Incredible.
All right. It still holds up.
So, all right. So, I know we got to get you out of here. So, before we do our rapid fire questions, we got to do a Patreon question. Roger Downs wants to know, do you think Lauren and this album's legacy would be even bigger if not for her erratic behavior?
I feel like her erratic behavior doesn't hurt the album. Like I was saying earlier, it's like she put out a perfect masterpiece and disappeared. You know, so the Lauren that we have now, even though this is the same woman, it just feels like there's a disconnect there. So it's just like, man. So I feel like it doesn't affect the legacy of, you know, the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, you know. So I wouldn't go that far as to say it doesn't ruin anything.
I think it's sad. I think I think the album speaks for itself 100%.
Two Drake albums, Josh. Okay. Two.
All right.
I ain't no way to have five Drake albums on there.
Okay. My bad, dude. I'm talking out of my ass 90% of the time, dude.
You know they have 90 Beatles albums on every list Rolling Stone ever does.
We don't get, dude, I say this to everybody. Like, the artists like Elvis Presley and fucking, and even you throw Michael Jackson, Elvis Presley, and the Beatles, unless you lived during those eras, you don't get, you're like, I don't get it. Like, I mean, you can get Michael Jackson, but unless you remember, dude, we owned the making of Thriller. Yeah. Everybody owned that. That was as big as the actual fucking music video. The behind the scene, he was that big. We'll never understand, Tony, how big Elvis Presley was.
or how big the Beatles were, because we
I'm not mad. I'm not mad at, like, well, I don't know what particular Elvis Presley album was the one that stood out, but I'm not mad at the Beatles, because the Beatles to me should be on these lists, because yeah. you know, their music is just what they were able to do in a short time window as a group.
Yeah,
it's just second to none. But it's just like, all right, man, but tracks can be skipped, you know. Some of the stuff just don't, you know, they weren't that strong vocally, so it was just like, all right, they're some of the best to ever do it, but they're not the best to ever do it.
I think it's one of the things that makes me love this album even more, and it's sad because this album and the success of this record is what made her have that erratic behavior.
Yeah,
whether it's the pressure of having to make another one, right. or it's just all those people like saying you're great.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know her childhood. I don't know what she's been through, but, you know, I know this record and I know she feels differently than you and me. Right. And she knows how to, you know, it's, I couldn't imagine going, having everybody like saying like Radiohead put out OK Computer. And there's a concert video about how they handled people saying they made one of the best records of all time. And it's like, you pull away from that. And right. some people just, you know, just can't handle it. And I
think that's a lot. Imagine the onslaught of you breaking off from a group that was incredibly successful. And then you go solo and have this huge impact and run and Grammys and you breaking records. And it's just like, so you got all these people tugging at you. It's just an onslaught of attention and people just wanting something. All the while, she's still also becoming a mom of multiple children. So you got motherhood, breakup, pressure, success, attention. So that's just like, we're not meant to handle all that as human beings.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and you know, musicians are incredibly, artists in general are incredibly sensitive. That's what makes us, you know, artists, you know, yeah. until we just become. So, you know, that's a lot to contend with, especially when you weren't in the game. Like, you know, even Michael Jackson crumbled, but he was groomed since he was a baby to withstand some of the pressures of, you know, superstardom and showbiz. And even that fucked him up. But it was just like he was able to hang in there and still, you know, put out new music. But yeah. you got to be a special breed to handle to yeah. weather that kind of storm.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. And I mean, Lauren, I hate to say Lauren won in the Fugees putting out solos or what, you know, yes, Wyclef still is around and probably still puts right. on shows, but no one gives a fuck about, like, we love the Carnival, but the Carnival isn't something that is going to be talked about years from now. Praz, Ghetto Superstar, was if it's not for that Maya hook, it ain't shit.
But the Carnival is incredible.
I love the Carnival.
And I feel it. Like, if you compare it to the Miseducation, fine, but like on its own merit, the Carnival is a amazing piece of work.
I agree. I love that record.
And he's a talented musician. Like, very, he's multi-talented as well.
Gone to November, great song. I can name what, Armageddon. There's like even the licky 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 here, like a show they got back. Said asking for a dance. Hold on, there's too many in the whoop back. I know that whole album. All right.
Wyclef.
What happened to Praz, though? You know,
besides
Ghetto Superstar, name a Praz song.
I didn't like the album. When his album dropped, I was excited because it was Praz and the Fugees were 2-0 on the solo tip. I bought Praz opening day. And I was like, God damn it, this sucks. And you know, I've been pissed ever since. But, you know, I respect his contributions to the score and to, you know, the features and stuff like that. So I don't want to, but you know, I mean, it's obvious.
It's obvious. All right. I ask every guest these questions. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to hear your answers. I'm going to answer them along with you.
Okay.
And thank you for doing this, man, because I feel like I chased you down. You are a hard man to get in touch with, dude. I'm not going to lie. All right. Favorite song on the record?
Favorite song on the record, X Factor.
Mm-hmm. Right now, it's Tell Him.
Okay.
I God damn, dude. I could tell you Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, Tell Him, Everything Is Everything I Can't Stop Listening To, and Forgive Me, Father. Forgive Them, Father, is, I slept on that fucking song. Those little bridges that bonk. Boom.
Yeah.
And gain a neighbor. Is there a building? Oh, that got me. Dude, at a gym. All right.
Crying.
I cry a lot.
I cry a lot.
I know this shit. Me too.
But you have more grace. I don't have.
I'll be crying. I was crying in the gym today, man. But I like crying in the gym because I can hide it in the sweat. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
All right. I'm curious to hear yours. Okay. I'm not even going to call it Lee's favorite song on the record, but what song would you skip over?
I'm going to go with the same one you did, Every Ghetto, Every City, because I don't like the way it sounds when they first start that. I'll be like, skip.
Chunky doodly doo, yeah, coming on my grandma's shoe.
I respect the song and it's a good song, but that's the weakest link in the mix up. Easy.
I don't skip over anything. Even the interludes. Like you skip over the white.
I love the interludes with the kids and the teacher, and I love the instrumentation on one of them in particular. I love that instrumental that they're playing in the background. I'm like, man, I want to hear a song of this.
That wasn't even in a classroom. That was just in Lauryn Hill's house in New Jersey. And I forget. It was like some like philosopher or like somebody like a sociologist or something was just talking to these kids about love. And that's how you do interludes.
Even better.
Even better.
Even better.
All right. Now I'm curious to hear this because I feel like you might have already done it to this record. Mm-hmm. What song or what songs on this record have you fucked to?
Shoot.
Would you?
Shoot. One of the Baker Boys might have been conceived to this album. I definitely smashed while this album was playing, but I'm not sure which song was on. Because some of these songs will have you feeling bad for smashing to, but the one that's most smashable to is probably Nothing Even Matters, because that's like the sexiest song on the album, I would say, because it's a lot of pain in the other tracks, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you can't be smashing the X Factor and it hurts so bad. And yeah, like, you know, can.
It sounds like it.
You could be getting it in the final hour and like, you know...
when it hurts so bad, you can say it. You can smash that. I used to love him. You can smash to that. Even
you can smash the doo-wop, that thing.
I think you can smash to almost everything on this record. You might just even start it with like Lost Ones and then just fucking go, dude.
You're so silly. Definitely smash worthy tracks on here, but
you have to pick one now. You have to pick one now.
I'm going to pick the one with D'Angelo, man. We smash until Nothing Even Matters.
100%. I agree with that. I agree with that. But I'd even smash to Tell Him, because that's just, you know, I'd be like, tell me.
But it'd be hard to smash to The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
I mean, that's the song that just...
Deep in my heart. It's just so, you know... That's an emotional track right there.
I think that out of everything that's on this record, it's like, it's probably the most personal. I mean, that's literally her bearing her soul.
Yes.
This record, man, it's like,
it's a long album and it's perfect.
I don't want it. I want more.
This is 16 tracks,
69 minutes and 20 seconds.
If you take off the weak link, we got 15 tracks of pure unskippability.
I wonder if there's people that are like, oh my God, man, how can you guys hate Every Ghetto, Every City?
I don't hate it. I don't hate it.
I do.
It's just, you know, it's just that track though.
Dude, I love you, man. I know we got to get you out of here. So promote away. Anything you want to promote?
Check out my podcast, Daddy Issues. My co-hosts are Keon Poley, DC Urban, Chaz Rogers, and Craig Wayans. We drop new episodes every Thursday. So tune into those. Check out my solo podcast, Verbal Cardio. I drop new episodes every Wednesday on all platforms. Subscribe to my YouTube, Tony Baker Comedy. Check out my comedy tour dates. I'm not sure when you're dropping this episode.
It comes out Wednesday.
Oh, okay, so you can catch me in Richmond, Virginia, June 16th through the 18th. And I'll be in Baltimore, in your neck of the woods, kind of sort of, July 7th through the 9th. But also, I'll be in several different cities. I'm doing a one-nighter in Boston, so if you're in that area, just check out my tour schedule. And, sure, I think that's it, man. Yeah, I think that's it.
Dude, I've said it a million times. You're one of my favorite comics. I mean that. You're one of the few comics that brings tears to my eyes almost every time I watch you.
But you be crying a lot, so don't
have to. I do. But it's not watching comedy. I'm not going to lie. It takes a lot. But also, I look up to you, man. It's like I said, you've handled everything, your whole career with grace and everything you've been through. And I can't, you know, you are a positive image for people to look at and how to do this job and do it proper and say what you want to say and how to present yourself. And so I mean that, man. You're one of the good ones in this business.
Thank you, bro, man. Love you, man. I love you too. I'm always the jam.
Well, do the goddamn comedy jam June 12th. Are you going to be in town at the Comedy Store? I'm putting you on the spot.
I've been trying to sit my ass down because I'm overwhelmed with stuff.
Yeah.
Emotionally as well as occupationally. So I've been trying to say no to everything.
Okay, good.
As much as I can anyway, but I'll do it later on down the line for sure.
I'll take that.
For sure.
Dude, you rule. Thank you, brother.
Thank you, bro.
What did I tell you? The one and only Tony Baker. Follow him on Twitter at Tony Baker Comedy, on Instagram at Tony Baker. Trust me, follow him. Patreon.com/Tony Baker Comedy. Support all things Tony and his website, TonyBakerComedy.com. And check his new special that he also produced called Tony Baker and Friends. We just listened to Lauryn Hill from 1998. What do we got? Rhapsody from Snow Hill, North Carolina. The two-time Grammy nominee said Lauryn Hill spoke to her. So she's a banger. This is her brand new single, Dust to Diamonds. But you can go to the website, 500podcast.com, to find out more. And yeah, we want your music. Guys, next week, Nirvana. It's Nirvana week. Nirvana na 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 na. We're doing the Unplugged from 94. Dig into it. Bye. All the pressure and the pain, I turned us to diamonds. Turn a quarter to a quarter milli. Went from dark days in the black. I ain't Lauryn Hill, but still the path I took was hella hilly. A queen within her palace, every stone you threw, look what it built me. This for every baller that you caught, I hope you looked at Billy Jean King, my glove swing, I made them see stars and thrillers. Layla Ali ran the track like Flojo, nail me to the crosses. X Games, Kelly Clarks, pipe down, made them do it. Arena scream, Serena, this like Jesus music. Never seen nobody body like she body with that body, Jesus Christ. Counting all the crosses, Diana Taurasi, hella nice. Veins filled with hella ice, so why I need a jury? I put a spin on everything, yeah, I'm Christy Yamaguchi. I turn dust into diamonds and turn diamonds just like Dot. I'm Richard's son, but not enough. They still try to sock her price and never foot the bill. Though we defeated that twice, times twice. Four on Abbey Road, it's what it feel like, soccer. I keep on turning dust to diamonds. Oh, make sure that this rust keeps shining. No matter the price I pay. And I'll get back up and keep on fighting. I'll be the one to ride the lightning. Through all the pressure and the pain, I turned dust to diamonds. Give me my brand and put the ham on, ham on. This ain't the spur of a moment. I get my ham on, MIA, my jam on. A heat check like Allison Felix. Give me respect, screaming we next. Osaka, Naomi, the pressure was on me. Made diamonds out of rock checks. A ball flex, Cunningham. Cunningham, I waited. Remember all the roads that they gated. I skated, you should join it just like Jackie do. Whatever occurred, see it through and up the checks. Ask for equal pay and they Douglas. Douglas, Gabby, Simone, only ones that we respect. On floors, their routines are not like yours. We ride waves, they do oars. Sticks and stones don't break bones. Diamonds coming out my pore. We ain't poor, we complex like diamonds. We got necks, these bodies ain't just objects. Our objects can't judge me. I hold court like Super. So whoever needed the jewelry, made diamonds out of two words. Don't die, man, just get yours. Careful of those stones you're throwing. That's what keeps me going, going. I keep on turning dust to diamonds. I'll make sure that this rust keeps shining. No matter the price I pay. And I'll get back up and keep on fighting. I'll be the one to ride the lightning. Through all the pressure and the pain, I turn dust to diamonds.
500. Keeping it fleecy for the Fleece Nation. On the 500.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey there. I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
Next Chapter Podcasts.